Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA, and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show. Thanks for hanging out with us. I'm back from vacation. It's been a quick week. Last week, I was on the sunny beaches of Destin, Florida, which is in the Panhandle. It's about 150 degrees inland, but when you get on the beach, it's about 90. But still, we had a great time, came back all tanned and relaxed. And we tried the week before to have Doug Hughes call, who was actually on vacation with his father in Europe, calling in from Athens, Greece. The connection did not quite work out as we had planned. And we'd even tested that connection earlier in the day. Mm-hmm. We had it down. Doug Hughes joins me now live in the studio. And Dougie, we're going to be talking about that Greece visit that you had.
Absolutely. Greece is in the news constantly.
And so the boots
we'll
on the ground.
A lot of good things to talk about.
We had a roaming correspondent in Doug Hughes out there. So, hey, a couple things just want to talk about. You know, you've heard us talk a lot about our book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, a resource for adults ages 50 and older. Been getting some requests from service clubs. I'm going to be speaking at the Northside Exchange Club in another couple weeks about the book, kind of what it's about, how it can help people. So if you are in a service club and looking for speakers, and I know it's difficult because you have to get one each and every month, give us a call, give us a shout. We'd be happy to come over and share a 15-20 minute talk. We'll have a lot of fun and hopefully educate the people of your service club. You can call or just email us at cfci.us. Also, we have an upcoming Social Security workshop at the library. It's on July 9th in the morning and July 16th in the afternoon. We'll be talking about the steps you should take as you're nearing retirement, maximizing your Social Security benefits, and then these advanced claiming strategies that you, if you're a listener to the show, we've talked about this, how you can file on someone else's record and suspend yours and let yours delay, and all of these different ways that you can maximize Social Security. So again, that is July 9th and the 16th. So if you'd like to go, you can email us at cfci.us. You may even get something in the mail. It looks like a big Social Security card, and on that is just an 800 number, kind of a reservation line that you can call. We're not going to feed you. You don't have to pay. We're not even going to give you a glass of water. It's going to be at the library. I've been getting in a lot of information from outside advisors in this state that are coming into Bloomington and offering to buy dinner and lunches and big steak dinners, Doug, mm-hmm. to have you come listen about Social Security. But, you know, I'm just going to give you one little warning that it's almost like a girl going on a date with a guy and he buys a really lavish dinner and he may expect something at the end of dinner. So I'm just saying, be careful out there. Hey, we're going to take a second here and talk a little bit about some news of the week. We have, of course, Lance Like of the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call my friend Lance at the Like Law Group, 323-8300. Well, this is the big one we've been waiting for. Supreme Court finally rules that U.S. tax subsidies are legal for all health insurance exchanges. The justices ruled 6-3 that individuals who have been receiving federal subsidies are due those tax breaks, no matter whether they purchase the health insurance from state or federal online exchanges. This is going to talk about the Greek debt just a little bit. The bitter standoff between Greece and its international creditors was extended. A key meeting on the Eurozone finance front broke up on Thursday today without agreements on their package. Instead, they've got the folks in Greece all riled up because if they do come up with an agreement, it still has to pass through the parliament over there, and they owe $1.8 billion by next Tuesday. So we'll see how that all shakes out. Do you know how long it takes to double your money? Well, there's this old rule of 72. You take the return you expect divided into 72, and that's how long it takes to double your money. Well, when you consider taxes, it can be a little bit longer than that. As an example, if you make 6% on your money, it would take 12 years to double it in a tax-deferred account like an IRA. But if you are paying taxes on that money at the highest tax rate, 39.6% in this country, it would take over 20 years to double your money at 6%. So you need to take taxes into consideration. You know, everyone's been saying rates are going to go up someday. Well, they probably will, and it looks like maybe even as early as September. But don't be too worried about it. The last time the Federal Reserve began a rate tightening cycle was back in 2004, 11 years ago. In the first month following the Fed hike, the S&P fell 3.3%, but in the 6 months following the hike, the S&P actually gained 7.2%. And on the interest rate front, The 10-year Treasury note dropped in the first month from 4.6 to 4.5. In the 6 months following the Fed rate hike, the 10-year note actually dropped from 4.62 all the way down to 4.27. I've been saying this on Glass in the Morning, been saying this on the show. What the Fed is going to do is raise the overnight borrowing between banks. It's going to affect very little the capital markets, the 10-year rates, the 30-year rates. That's going to be driven more on economic growth and future inflation worries. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to tap into that mind of Douglas Hughes as he made that trip to Europe with his father. They were gone for 10 days, and he has a lot to report back. It was really interesting to have him debrief us when he came back, so now I want him to do that to you. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Gosh, I'm practically getting undressed here to try to do the show. I was like, all bound up. I took my shirt out and rolled my sleeves up and unbuttoned my collar. Now I'm relaxed. Now I'm ready to go. You know, after a long day at the office, you would think doing a 6 o'clock radio show would still be just really easy. It's not. Sometimes you have to re-fire up a little bit, and that's what I was doing during the break. Doug Hughes is with me in studio, and you know, we've been talking about Greece for a long time, and our weekly update that you can also get is free, cfci.us, is called our weekly commentary. It's actually a bi-weekly commentary. We'd be happy to send that to you. It comes out via email. We talked about the Greece problem and kind of explained it. So what I thought I might do is sort of kick off this section as we talk about Greece and Doug's boots on the ground view of the Greek situation. Just what's going on? Well, for weeks, the Greek leaders have been obviously deadlocked in negotiations with creditors over the latest round of debt relief. And Greece can't pay its bills, so it's locked out of the traditional credit markets because of its bad economic situation. But to keep the lights on in the country running, Greece has been relying on the financial support of the Eurozone and International Monetary Fund all the way back since 2010. Now, that was in exchange for the creditors instituting a set of austerity measures and budget cuts designed to help Greece get on sounder financial footing. Now, these cuts have been widely hated by the Greeks. The new government was actually elected in January because they promised to tear up the credit agreements and end the austerity measures. And since then, the creditors have refused to lend to Greece more money until they agree to reinstate the reforms. So I guess the big question might be, why won't they just fold and do what they need to do to get this money? Well, they blame the austerity measures on the shrinking economy. They say it shrunk by 21% over that time, and they drove unemployment to 25%. It's actually 50% amongst young workers. The current government said they would also violate campaign promises if they agreed to the proposed cuts to the pension system, which is the big sticking point over there, or raise taxes. The Greek negotiations have asked for some forgiveness. They bundled a bunch of interest payments into one, but they just have not been able to get it done. And they have to get something done by this Saturday. That's going to be, it sounds like, the last-ditch effort before next Tuesday. And I say that because that's what they said, but I really think if it's not Saturday, it'll be Sunday, it'll be Monday. And my real gut feeling on this is they'll come to some kind of an agreement, an extension. But, Doug, you were there.
I was there.
On the ground. And, yes. And you really came back with a pretty good perspective of what's happening over there in Greece, the attitude of the Greek people,
yes.
Different than what you probably thought.
Exactly. And, you know, let me just begin by saying that spent a lot of time talking to the Greek people. I'm a very social person, so I like meeting people and talking to them. As many of them as spoke English, I spent some time talking to them. And, you know, from our perspective, we tend to forget that Greece has been an issue for about 5 or 6 years now. So they've been hearing about this all along and having disappointments and frustrations all along.
Mm-hmm.
But this just continues to be a story. They're almost not immune to it, but they're used to it at this point. We began hearing things like they don't trust the government, the old government tactic, if you can't convince people, confuse them. And, you know, different things like that. So there's a lot of frustration towards the government and its negotiating. But there's also a lot of feeling of collective guilt among the Greek people because for many years, and I don't mean to be offensive to Greek people, but they do a lot of tax avoidance situations or evadance, whichever we want to say. Because
there's a big difference, Doug. Tax evasion.
20 years, right?
About 20 years difference.
About 20 years difference. And so one of the things that the Greek government has had to do is really increase the tax on property because it's physical and they can see that. But construction workers and people that own businesses, people are handling cash back and forth. The euros, they're doing, you know, under the table kind of thing. So the people may not be in as bad shape as we think they may be.
Yeah.
But there is a collective guilt that says, okay, a lot of this is happening because of us. Another thing about Greece that people should keep in mind is if you take out just your map of the world and you look at Greece, you have the Peloponnese Peninsula, which is one large area, and the rest of it is hundreds of islands. And so when you look at Greece, which is primarily a tourist destination, mm-hmm. a phenomenal one, by the way, you have to recognize that a lot of the economic activity is happening among hundreds of small islands. And so it's really very difficult to follow the money in sure. a situation like that. And so when you look at Greece, which the economy is 18% tourism, had 19 million visitors last year, you have to understand a lot of this is coming through untrackable or untraceable dollars and euros that are coming in on the cruise ships and the different vacations that are happening. The people there are, they seem to be very nervous because now 50 businesses are closing down every month. However, a lot of these are coffee shops and little trinket type places that aren't going to make it in the long term anyway. The sadder note, though, I think than those particular things, and I have more details I can talk about, is there is a great social depression that is coming on, not just a financial, but a social depression. Mm-hmm. Where they were talking to us, some of the tour guides were with and different things, different people were talking to us about suicide rates being at almost all-time highs, maybe even all-time highs, and trackable numbers, just simply because when you're 45, 55, 65, and you have debts and you have a life you've put together, the next thing you know, you're never going to be able to pay those debts off with the unemployment numbers that you read. And so alarming numbers of suicides are happening. And when the tour guide was telling me that, I didn't know whether to believe that. But when I was on the plane flying back in the Financial Times this last weekend, the whole first section was about Greece. And one of the articles was about this increasing suicide number. We have unemployment checks coming to people between the ages of 17 and 25.
Yeah,
and
it's amazing.
And it's because they can't find jobs. So there's a lot of that kind of social depression that's going on in Greece, which is really very troubling.
Yeah, and if you're a bunch of young people with no jobs, it's almost like being on an Indian reservation here in the United States. You have alcoholism, you have suicides.
Yes.
It's just a troubling area.
And David, what's amazing about Greece is when you go through that, and one of the things we did to visit a lot of the ruins, you know, you're looking at palaces and castles and places that have been that had running water 2,500 and 3,000 years ago. You know, we were 150, 200 years ago, we still had the outhouses, mm-hmm. right? Maybe not. So this society has just gone through so many changes. The other thing I will tell you, but yet they haven't been able to keep the money together, and that's why they're having this problem. The other thing that's very interesting about Greece that most people don't know is people would say, well, why don't they just start, you know, manufacturing things and doing things like
right.
that? Well, Greece is the third most mountainous country in Europe. Actually, more mountains in Greece than in Switzerland. So when you have hundreds of islands that are all either mountains
or water.
Just water,
ports.
There's not a lot you can do there. So what has happened in Greece is that private businesses are being taxed at 30 to 35%, but to keep the revenue coming in from the major shipping companies, they're charging them about 12% tax. So they're getting a big tax loss on one of the major industries, which is shipping through there. Lot of very, very interesting tax dynamics going on there that we really don't understand. They retire at 55 years old. They have unemployment checks at 17 years old. There's just a lot of dynamics that we just don't understand.
So obviously, you know, what happens if the talks fail and Greece goes into default? I mean, we really don't know for sure, but we're hoping that something will be worked out and maybe we won't have all this crazy volatility, Doug.
Exactly right. And what I would tell you is, David, I want to read one quote from Mr. Spras, that's how I had heard his name pronounced when I was there. And he said this about the Greek people. He says, "We are a nation of seafarers who know how to deal with storms and aren't afraid to sail to distant oceans in search of a safe harbor." One of the interesting things I heard, David, from the different people I talked to was the concern was not just the Eurozone and Germany and all these different countries. The concern was, what if we begin talking with Russia? And perhaps having Russia come in to help us out of this. Very interesting political strategy and thought. I hadn't thought of it till I heard that. if I have time for one quick story.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Napfleon, and we were, it's a small, a little village on the seaside. And Terry and I, my wife, were walking around, and the little school kids were having a day in the square. They were playing soccer, and you know me, I can't pass up a soccer game. So I jumped right in the middle of it with the kids, and we were kicking the soccer ball around, and they were high-fiving me and talking mm-hmm. to me and everything like that. And so one of the little boys was wearing a shirt that said New York City, and so I said, I've been there, and we were talking, and they said, well, where are you from? I said, I'm from America. And a little boy, probably 8, 9, 10 years old, looked at me and said, you're lucky. I said, really? Why is that? He said, because you Americans have money. So, David, even the young kids know that there is a real problem in that country. It's going to be very interesting to see if there's a bailout, if they work something out, or how they can get this all together.
Yeah, we're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, we're going to kind of shift gears. There's been a big move with the Department of Labor. It's being pushed from the president to change the meaning of a fiduciary as it relates to investment advice on retirement accounts. And the industry, our industry, has been in an uproar over it. Congress is cutting off funding to the Department of Labor for this. And, you know, I think what I told Doug is, let's use this as an opportunity to really talk about what you should expect from an investment advisor. Because really, when it comes down to it, if you think about the fees that you're paying a financial advisor, you need to understand what those are for. And I think a lot of folks just say, hey, it's a 1% fee, and you just assume that that's for the investment management. But we're going to dig into that just a little bit deeper and hopefully help you understand what it is to have an advisor, what you should expect from that advisor, and what it is that's reasonable to pay that advisor. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes is in house with me. You know, as we talk about this word fiduciary, I mean, basically what that means is you should act in the best interest of your clients, putting their interests ahead of your own. I mean, it makes total sense. And I think when you read about this rule that they're trying to push through the Department of Labor that would make all of us act as a fiduciary, but in a different way, if they're putting a different type of spin on this, from the outside looking in, you might think, huh, that sounds pretty reasonable and pretty protective of the consumer. But just like anything, there's a lot of devils in the details. There's a lot of unintended consequences of the rule. You know, I was thinking about, you know, lots of different things like that, you know, over the years, where on the surface it sounded like, wow, that sounds really good. And then as you dig into it a little bit deeper, you think, huh, well, that probably is going to hurt those people and these people. So, Doug, I mean, we're not going to spend a ton of time on this, but the Department of Labor has been trying to, or they've been trying to push through the Department of Labor this new meaning of a fiduciary as it relates to investment advice for retirement accounts. What's it trying to accomplish?
Well, what it's really trying to accomplish is, in their words, is trying to align more closely people's retirement accounts with a simple approach, meaning that investments that have a more complex approach, a more complex fee structure, you know, would not be allowed for, mm-hmm. you know, taking your 401k and rolling it to your IRA. Almost prohibiting those going from one thing to another. It is also really trying to, if you just read the letter, what it's trying to do is compare higher cost investments with lower cost investments and say that there are people who have conflicts of interest, or products are conflicts of interest between the advisor, the planner, the registered representative, whatever that person's designation is, and the consumer public. So it's an awareness. It's almost saying there are certain things that you should not be using because of the fees, the structures, and things like that. And what it doesn't really address is what those perhaps complex products actually do for those fees. It just is almost saying this is bad, so be careful.
Anything with the fee is bad. Anything with a higher fee is bad. And that's where I think they're missing it, because sometimes you get what you pay for. I mean, it's worth paying the fee.
Exactly. And just because something is cheaper doesn't mean it's better.
Right. And sometimes just because it sounds too good to be true, it's not too good to be true. It's too good to be free.
Exactly. And what a lot of this is coming down to, David, is the comparison over different time frames of different investments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can take some decades where active management, like mutual funds, has outperformed indexes. Then you take other times when indexes have outperformed active mutual funds. But it's not fair to say that one always is better than the other, because you don't really know. It's probably more of a blend.
I think they were focusing so much just on fees, on the investments, they forgot about the advice side of this thing. It's like it's totally ignored, and I think that's where I wanted to take this conversation.
Absolutely.
That, you know, if you're paying an advisor, what's that for? Well, there's two types of advisors, and some wear both hats. You have the commission-based advisor, which charges a commission on the trades or the products they sell, and they work under what's called the suitability standard. Are you suitable for that investment? If you are, then I can sell this to you.
Net worth, income, risk tolerance. Right. So our listeners know it's based on income, net worth, goals, time frame you need money, and things
like
that.
Are you suitable?
Risk tolerance.
It's fine. The other side of the world is a fee-based side, and you're going to pay a fee. And it should be just that's all. You never pay a commission and a fee. You should just always pay a fee. And you know that on that side, it works under the fiduciary standard. So the fiduciary is putting your own interest behind those of the client. Makes sense. But I can tell you that anyone who's been in business for very long is going to have to always put their client's best interest in front of their own. Otherwise, they're going to be out of business.
Right.
But when it comes to the investment side, the investment expenses, you know, let's say that we charge 1%. Well, 1%, they might think, wow, 1%, that's expensive for, you know, buying these funds or these investments. But really, if you break it down, you could say, well, really, it's 0.3 or 0.4% is for the investment management. The other 0.5 or 0.6% or 0.7 is for the advice. That's to have me. And it's like, okay, well, what do you give me? Well, I should be giving you a lot of stuff. Not only just a person to talk to and a person to help you plan, but help you develop a retirement income plan. Seen it all the way through with you. You know, if you're working through an 800 number, Doug, you're not going to get the same person every time. And even if they've assigned someone to you, because a lot of the big firms will, that person probably won't be there forever. You know, I can tell you that when you're talking to an advisor locally, you're going to probably be sticking with one for a long, long time.
We had this conversation today at lunch, David. There are some advisors in this town who have been doing this business for 30, 40, 50 years. So there is a wonderful value to clinging to someone and letting them work with you through the decades, through, as I'm sure you're going to get ready to talk about next, the distribution planning, the end-of-life planning, the estate planning.
Tax-reducing strategies, wealth transfer ideas, proper beneficiary plan, like you said, disclaiming trust, all that. Rule of 55, you know, someone came in the other day. I can tell you for sure, I was on the 800 number with a big firm, and we were talking with the retirement plan specialist, and I had my little fingers up in quotes just now, folks.
He did.
That you can't see me. And we were talking about whether this person should roll the money out of an IRA, their 401k or not. And the person on the phone was trying to convince them to roll it into an IRA there at their firm, which is a big firm, which is where their 401k was held. And we were calling to actually just get information because we didn't want to roll it out at all. And the reason was this person was 55 years old, just terminated service, and the only access they had to money between now and 59 and a half without a penalty or some elaborate structure was using the 401k. Because, folks, if you terminate service in the year you're 55, you can access that money with no penalty. But if you roll it to an IRA, immediately you're under the 59 and a half rule. The person on the other end didn't know that. They were trying to get them to roll it to the IRA. So whether it's net unrealized appreciation on company stock or all these types of things, those are the kind of things you should expect from an advisor. I was with someone just today who had a pretty bad tax problem. You know, they were paying a lot in taxes, and we sat down and we worked through just doing this, deferring a little bit more here, doing this, doing the Indiana tax credits here, doing a recharacterization on a Roth they did last year, just running some business expenses through the business that rather than paying them out of pocket because they're looked at differently. By the time we summed all this stuff up, I said, you know, we've got about $10,000 in savings here just by making these four little adjustments. You know, like my friend Ed Slott, who we replayed last week, said when he saved a family over $50,000 and we were around the table talking about fees and how much to charge, he says, hey, I just saved you $50,000. How much should I charge you? And his answer was about whatever I want. So I'm not taking it that far, but that's what you should be paying, not extra for, but that's part of that 60 basis points that you should be, that's what you should be expecting.
And David, you know, I obviously won't call any names out here, but there's a very, very popular media financial consultant. I'm not even, not an investment guy, but a guy who does really good debt reduction strategies and things like that. He was on the radio and he, you know, someone had an NUA opportunity and he told him not to take it. So just because someone has a big broadcast or they're on the radio in multi-state and all these different things going on doesn't mean they know what they're doing. And that's something that that person just heard on the radio by an unlicensed professional. They would have made a big mistake. if they were sitting down with you talking about NUA, that mistake wouldn't have been made. So the point is that there is great value to the personal advisor.
And what you should expect from them, this proposal, this DOL, Department of Labor Fiduciary Standard on Investment Advice and Retirement Accounts, actually came out in 2010, and it's just now making its way to the kitchen, and we're hoping that it dies on the vine, because basically what the amount of disclosures, just like any government thing that gets mandated on you, would require would run people out of our business. We have over 10,000 people a day, folks, turning 65. We have, and that's going to continue for the next 15 years, practically. We have already a shortage of quality financial advisors, I think, in this country. We don't have a good training system set up for that. And this would run people out, because the amount of disclosures, it's not about the, you know, them not wanting to work under this kind of standard. That's not it at all. It's the amount of disclosures would not be feasible. And if you're not, if you don't have an account that's $500,000 or better, they're going to, you wouldn't be able to afford to take on that client. And that's going to force a lot of advisors out of the business. It's going to keep a populace underserved, who needs served. Just a person that retires from the county or the school mm-hmm. system with $125,000 needs the same kind of help as someone sure. that retired out of...
maybe even more.
Yeah, and probably even more. I mean, there's other issues that they have as opposed to someone that has a couple million bucks. We're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, we got a few more things to talk about. One thing we're going to talk about is risk management. You know, right now, you know, with the markets kind of, you know, hitting highs and then dropping and hitting highs. And we're going to talk about some risk management concepts. This came from Worthwhile. It's actually a Raymond James publication. We found it. It was really, really good. And we're also going to talk about easy ways to calculate an after-tax rate of return. You know, people will earn 8%, let's say, in a taxable account, but then they say, but after tax, what is that really worth? So we're going to give you some really easy ideas and ways to calculate that after-tax return, and then natural ways to avoid risk as well. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Whether you listen to the show on Thursday nights at 6, Saturday mornings at 9, or on WGCORadio.com, we appreciate you hanging out with us. It is News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Been on this show, I've been doing this show for a long, long time. I was trying to think this morning, I think it was February of 2002 when I first started doing the program. So do the math, that's a long time, well over a decade now. So I'm hoping they'll allow me to continue to do this for the next decade or two and continue to bring some reasonable advice and information that you can actually use. That's the goal. Hey, we're going to be talking in just a few minutes about some risk management ideas, but I wanted to remind you, if you didn't hear it earlier in the show, that we're going to be doing a program on Social Security maximization strategies, you know, just the things you need to worry about and take into consideration as you near retirement. Maximizing your benefits, advanced claiming strategies, is going to be over at the library, the Monroe County Library. We're doing it on July 9th, that's a morning session, and then we'll have a July 16th afternoon session. If you'd like to go, just email us at cfci.us. That's cfci.us. Contact us. Just say you'd like to come. Just so we know how many seats to put out. I mean, it doesn't cost anything. It's completely free. We're not going to feed you, and we're not going to probably even put out cookies or water. I mean, it's really an informational session, community service thing. So come on out, check it out. I think you'll learn something. We wanted to reboot these again. We had done them a lot last year, very successful. I mean, we're talking 40, 50 sometimes at each session. And we'll sometimes cut it off at around 40 or 50. We don't want the group to get too big. We want them to be able to engage and ask questions if necessary. So you do want to make sure that you get in early, because they typically do swell to that number fairly quickly. And then we just sent out I think it was a big Social Security card-looking thing that many of you may be getting in the mail, and that's another way to register for the workshop. So again, that's at the Monroe County Library, July 9th and the 16th. And then again, you know, Doug and I worked for about 2 years putting the book together, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, and we spent an entire show talking about it not long ago. But we want to reiterate that if you're interested in having one of us come to your service club to kind of talk about the book, you know, the retirement crisis in America, the boomer generation and retirement readiness, and really kind of just talk in general about what's happening in this world and the economy. And I promise it would be fun, it'd be entertaining, and we'd love to do it. So if you are looking for a speaker for your service club, I'm going to be at the Northside Exchange Club, I think, in a couple of weeks for my first one regarding the book. Feel free to email us again at cfci.us and just say we'd like to make a speaker request, and we'll be happy to be there. So Doug joins me back in the studio live. A few weeks ago, we were in Greece.
Yes.
You were in Greece. I was in Destin last week. We replayed the Ed Slott show. We tried to get you on the telephone from Greece. You stayed up. How late was it when you called?
It was 1:30 in the morning when I called.
And you tried.
I tried and tried. When we were in the Ionian Sea,
yes,
we made a switch into the Aegean Sea. And when that happened, I guess the phones wouldn't go through. So I woke up at about 1:15, and I was dialing, and I was like, Jim. Jim is our guy in here. I was like, Jim, pick up the phone. Nothing. So I don't know. I tried.
I know you did. And we pretty appreciated it. So Wayne and I, we filled in the time nicely. But now you're here, and now you're able to tell the story.
Many requests for me to come back after that.
I can tell you, though, that maybe it was really kind of cool that you were going to call from Greece. But
yes.
It was really great to have you come on the show today. And folks, if you didn't hear his report from Boots on the Ground in Greece, you need to listen to the show again, at least that segment, because it's really good. It gives you a lot of perspective. I mean, when you get your head out of the sandbox, Doug,
right,
you learn a lot.
You learn so much when you travel outside of the country. You learn so much when you go to a place where and you talk to the people. I will tell you that the streets are packed. I mean, the people are driving. The traffic is horrible. I mean, they don't operate as though this is all going to crumble. But like I said, they've heard this for 5 years.
Well, and
now,
like you said, they're actually doing probably a little better personally than what you think.
That's
because
right,
of all
yes,
the money that just moves around under the table. It's
property
the government,
taxes,
the debt.
Property tax is nearly 20% there.
Well,
and that's
their,
how they're
their debt
to get
is double the size of their gross national product.
Right.
I mean, that's a pretty big problem right there.
That's right.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some risk management ideas. You know, there's only a few things you can do with risk. I mean, one is just assume it, one is manage it, and one is shift it. We're going to talk about all of those when we come back. This is Your Money with David Hayes.
Risk, the fear of the unknown, unexpected consequences, things not turning out the way that we want them to. That's what risk is really all about. But it's a lesson that we learn at a young age, whether we realize it or not. Look both ways before you cross the street, brush your teeth, put on sunscreen, and David, one of my favorites growing up, don't swim 20 minutes after you eat. We all make decisions every day about risk in some fashion or another. Right now, let's talk about risk.
Well, I think a lot of folks will say, you know, I've been told that risk and reward go hand in hand. It's inseparable from performance, like as an example on your investments. But I'm not so sure that's really the truth. I mean, I think we think about risk differently. And, you know, the old saying that I've had forever is no one knows how much risk they can take until they've taken too much. Mm-hmm. That means I didn't look both ways. I got ran over by a car. So there's a lot of ways that you can manage risk. I mean, there's just so many. And again, going back to the value of a financial advisor, that's what they should be doing for you. Is if you're worried about this, or maybe they can help protect you from things that you don't even know exist. I mean, that's what we do for our kids all the time. That's mm-hmm. what we teach them to look both ways before they cross the road.
Absolutely.
Because they don't know to look both ways. They would just run out there like a whim and get run over. But, you know, you think about all these old sayings, you know, like look both ways before you cross the road, but also wear gloves while gardening, or, you know, buy a car with a high safety rating, wear a helmet when riding a bike or a motorcycle, baby proof your house. Like you said, put on sunscreen. I did not put on sunscreen the first day in Destin, and I paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 45 years old. I should have known better. But I do have kind of a darker skin, so typically
okay,
I tan pretty well.
You can absorb.
Yeah. Yeah, but the peeling gods have come a knocking. So, Doug, as you talk about different types of risk, you know, the bottom line is you can just assume it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting on a plane, like driving on a crowded highway, sitting in a chair that you assume will hold you up. I mean, what you just assume that these are okay things to do. You're assuming that risk. You can manage the risk. I mean, you can diversify your investments. You can title property proper. That's a tongue twister.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, if I should write stuff down, then I wouldn't be so tongue twisted. You know, you're just putting all of these things in place to help you manage the risk. And then you can shift it. Like, you can buy health and life insurance. You can buy long-term care insurance. You can shift that risk to an insurance company. And, Doug, I think a lot of times people assume too much risk, and they aren't managing, and they certainly aren't always shifting risk when they have opportunities.
Absolutely. And, you know, David, the Boy Scouts always taught us what? To always be prepared. But there's a point when you can be too prepared.
Grandpa Hayes used to say, prepare for the worst, but expect the best.
There you go. Exactly right. And so when that is your baseline to begin to build your financial plan, then you need to do those things.
You know, if you talk about, I was, again, with a younger couple, and I don't get to see a lot of young couples very often mm-hmm. because most of what I do is the retirement income planning. They tend to kind of come to us about 3, 4, 5 years out. But, you know, I really love working with people who are interested in doing the right things with their money. And we were talking about his biggest asset. When we asked him that question, you know, they drifted off to the normal areas, house, mm-hmm. cars, 401ks. And I said, no, really what your biggest asset is your ability to earn a paycheck. Mm-hmm. You know, at 34 years old, you have a lot of earnings years ahead of you. I sat down with someone who was a person that worked at General Motors, and he had tracked his earnings history from the very first. He's an engineer. Mm-hmm. From the very first day he received a paycheck, he goes, man, I've earned like $7 million in my lifetime. You know, so your number one asset is your ability to earn a paycheck, and you need to protect that. I mean, that's sure. disability income insurance and things like that. You know, these are, it's not all about investments. It's about protecting, you know, properly all of your other assets, including your number one, which could be your earning ability to make a paycheck.
And let's not forget the great book by Moshe Milevsky, Are You a Stock or a mm-hmm. Bond, which is all about investing and planning based on your human capital and your earning potential based on whether you have a job that continues to pay a steady paycheck and right. just gradually drifts higher, or whether you're in a paycheck that is volatile.
You know, and people think, well, I'm going to put all my money under the mattress. I want to make it safe. Mm-hmm. And there's risk there, too. I mean, loss of purchasing power. I mean, folks,
you don't lose money, you lose value.
You know, earlier in the show, we talked about how long it takes to double your money right at the beginning of the show. And when we talk about inflation risk, you know, if you have inflation of 4%, just because I know the math, and you divide that into 72, you need double the income in 18 mm-hmm. years just to buy the same goods and services. Well, if your money's under the mattress, it's basically losing value every single day. You really, I think, as you assume a little market risk, a little liquidity risk, a little interest rate risk, whatever it might be, it's going to make you a better investor. And sure. as someone once told me, it's a little bit like braids of hair. You know, one strand of hair by itself, pretty weak, and break it pretty easily. Two even you can break. But as you weave together or braid together three or four strands of hair, it becomes pretty darn strong. And that's really what investments are, what mm-hmm. diversification with investments do. Have you been experienced this with your one-on-one clients, a lot of angst right now? Or are people thinking things are still pretty darn good?
In regards to the markets?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think people are feeling a little toppy right here. I continue to hear a little bit of toppiness, that people feel like maybe we're a little frothy. Maybe we're at the tops here. Maybe we need to take a little more caution, so to speak. Or they don't dismiss the idea the market could be down by the end of this year or next year.
Well, according to By the Numbers, as of today, the S&P 500 has gone somewhere around 360 calendar days without a 10% or greater drop in the S&P 500. That's the third longest stretch in its history.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the longest stretch without a 10% decline was 2,553 days, and that went from 1990, the glorious 90s, the roaring mm-hmm. 90s, to 1997. So
wow.
I know why people are feeling this way, because they think, well, man, this has been going on a really long time, and I'm sure it's going to happen any moment now, but I'm telling you, it's been happening over and over and over, and there was a piece you just saw, I think, right before the show started that said, you know, when's this bubble going to burst? And the answer was, what's going
to break? There's a bubble out here, but what's to pop it? There's nothing to pop
it. And I think that's the biggest unknown and fear of people. And mm-hmm. the markets always price in what they kind of expect to happen, then adjust on reality. That's why I think the interest rate hikes, I think that, you know, whatever's happening over in Greece, a lot of that's already baked into the market. I think whether they get a deal done, if they get one, you'll probably see things go up a little bit. If they get one, they don't get one done, you'll see it go down a little bit, but then it will kind of adjust on reality. So mm-hmm. don't get too freaked out about that. Again, invest with a purpose behind your money, and just, you know, do what you can do, which is things you can control, which is saving, keeping your debt under control, and things like that. I need to mention one thing, Doug, just from a disclosure standpoint. The CFCI and J.W. Cole and J.W. Cole Advisors do not offer tax advice. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and wrap up the show and preview what's coming up on the next 2 weeks as we lean towards my favorite holiday, the 4th of July. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, you know, there's people that will say, you said that you were going to tell us how to figure out after-tax rates of return, and I will not be able to sleep tonight unless you do it, and I almost forgot, so I apologize very, very much. You know, a lot of folks will say, hey, I made 8% on my investments, and it wasn't in a retirement account, it was just in a regular account, and you have to pay taxes on that. And they say, well, how much did I really make after tax? Because taxes really matter. Now, when I went to IU and we learned how to calculate after-tax rates of return, they gave us this little formula, and it was 1 minus your tax rate times your return equaled your after-tax rate of return. Now, I just said that, and you're like, what? That's not easy. No, it's not, because you can't really write things down when you're driving down the road. So here's an easier way to look at it. Let's say that you have a 20% tax rate. That's going to be your capital gains rate, maximum capital gains rate, 20%. I made 8% on my money. So this is the way I do it. I say 8%. I just take that times 20% to figure out how much I lost in taxes. Well, that's 1.6%. Then I take my 1.6 off of my 8. That gives me 6.4. Very, very easy. 8% times my 20% tax bracket equals 1.6. Take 1.6 off my 8%. Voila! I have 6.4% after-tax rate of return. Doesn't that sound easier than 1 minus your tax rate times your return equals your after-tax rate of return? Jim, would you agree?
No.
Oh, he doesn't agree. He thinks they both were extremely complicated. But he's a media major,
yeah.
Right?
We
don't have media majors actually listening to the show unless you're forced or paid like Jim is. So there's, if you'd like to know how to calculate after-tax rate of return, then email me at cfci.us, and I promise I'll send you the formula that Jim thinks is just as easy as my little backdoor method. Doug Hughes has been in the studio with me. And Doug, you know, as we talked about before we went to break, that people are concerned. In fact, I'm meeting with someone next week, a longtime client that wants to take all of his money out of the market. And I can tell you why, because he's been reading Harry Dent stuff. You know, mm-hmm. Harry's been a longtime contributor to the show. And Harry's predicting the Dow down to 6,000. I mean, he's predicting the huge crisis in America. He's just all over the place. Well, my good friend, our good friend, Rodney Johnson. And he's actually the president of the H.S. Dent organization and the author and the editor of Survive and Prosper. He is scheduled to be on the show next week to kind of explain all of this craziness that Harry is out there talking about. I was talking to Eric Giesler about it. He says, you know, everything that Harry's talking about is really good, and it's really point on. I mean, when it comes to the demographics, the spending patterns, when it comes to the contraction of price to earnings, I mean, all kinds of stuff. He's like, man, he's right on, but his predictions are out there. So we're not going to invite Harry, although Harry would probably come on because Harry scares people, and he screams a lot. And then we get phone calls at our office, not out of people making people scared. Like, do I really need to do that? So we're going to have a more rational thinker.
Very
good speaker.
You will want to listen in.
Rodney Johnson next week, 6 p.m. on Your Money with David Hayes. Replays at 9 o'clock, always on WGCORadio.com. Again, if you'd like to pick up a copy of our book, it's available at all major online retailers, which is like Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Check it out. It's like $16. I think you'll really like it. We've worked hard on it. There's a lot of great information, and I know we've been talking a lot about it, but we're proud of it, and we hope that if you picked up a copy, it's been useful to you. So, Doug, thanks for hanging out with me tonight.
Thank you.
And, folks, I'll be back next week with Rodney Johnson on Your Money with David Hayes. Goodbye. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.
News Talk 96.1 and AM 13.